This is the beginning of Class 5.
Sāsī bhūti yuṣṭhīṁ etā śāṁ Vīrā viṣṭhī nyandē yambādī Sāṅgē śindhū mitte uvādī
that the two thoughts of bodhicitta have to alternate because one mind can't hold two thoughts at the same time.
You already told us.
Okay. Because it was on the homework a lot. And it's not your fault. I mean, I didn't take off for that because I said that they had to alternate. But they don't have to alternate because they are
complementary.
They can focus on the same object at the same time.
So you said in the class that they somehow mysteriously didn't alternate. Remember?
Well, now I want to say clearly that they don't. They don't alternate. They're complementary. They occur.
So you said in the class that they somehow mysteriously didn't alternate. Remember?
Well, now I want to say clearly that they don't. They don't alternate. They're complementary. They occur at the same time. And there is a debate in the book, which is what I was dimly remembering, which is that the two sense consciousness can't. They have to alternate. You can't. If the objects and if the two thoughts are not complementary, they do have to alternate, but not these two thoughts. They can be in the mind at the same time. And that's kind of a good reason for bodhicitta to be the main mind, then, because you have to be talking about the main mind that can hold those two at the same time. So that makes some sense. And then, what's the other one? A lot of people got one thing, not wrong, but the main reason why you have to say belonging to the greater way is to block that sugarcane bodhicitta could be Mahayana bodhicitta. Okay. And not that there are two other lower Hinayana wishes for enlightenment, that it could be, that's not the main reason. That's not the main reason that they give. So what was the other one? Oh, Rangtoki, which I still wasn't satisfied with, and I couldn't explain it well, and that's why no one got it very well. When it says, under its own power, of its own accord. So I asked my Lama again. I'm taking him to the doctor all the time now, but it's really useful. I try to pick one that's far away. I get to talk to him in the car. And
he goes, huh?
Right? Yeah, well, he tries to get away from it, but he's stuck in the car. You know?
He feels questions coming, and he goes like this, huh?
He hates questions. But anyway, the difference between main mind and a mental function. And when does one act of its own accord, and when does it act not of its own accord? So I said, can you give me an example of something acting of its own accord and something not acting of its own accord? And he gave me what I like the answer. This answer, the last one he gave me, I like a lot. He says, for example, if you think of an object and you're concentrating on the main object and not on any quality of the object, not on any particular feature of the object, what should that state of mind be? Mind or the mental function? Just the main awareness of an object.
Main.
That's main mind. And then mental function is, I'm jealous about this object, I'm angry about this object, I want this object, I want to get away from this object. Those are particular states of mind. When main mind moves to an object, according to which school you're in, there are a certain number of mental functions that have to move with it. For example, you can't have awareness without feeling, without sensation. It's impossible. Sensation is always going on. Feeling is always going on. Your mind is like a raw nerve. It's always open. Sometimes you are feeling neutral feeling. And most people mistake that for no feeling at all. But your capacity for feeling is always open. It's always there. That's why it's so easy to shift to good feeling, bad feeling. You know, one moment you're high, the next moment you're down. Feeling is always coming along with main. Whenever there's a main mind, it doesn't matter if it's an amoeba or a human or a Buddha. When you have main mind, you have a sensation of feeling going on at the same time. So what he said was, when the
not raw consciousness.
No, it's not. It's a mental function. Okay. It's interested in the goodness or badness or neutrality of the object.
Main
should
mind.
I feel? No, the feeling.
Feeling.
The capacity of feeling is thinking, should I hate this thing? Should I like this thing? Should I feel neutral about this thing? And the main mind is just aware of the object.
You
always have feeling. Sometimes feeling is neutral. But you always have one of those three feelings. Good feeling, bad feeling, or neutral feeling.
Even when you're out.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you have a very subtle kind of consciousness. Even when you're dreaming, you're having some kind of emotion about the dream, whether you like it or you don't like it, or you're neutral about it. But that neutrality is a feeling too.
So the main mind and the mental function go together then.
Right. They're always linked in five respects. And I didn't go through that with you, and I will some other time. Like, they're always occurring at the same time. They're always focused at the same object. They're always made of the same stuff. They're always relying on the same scent, on the same faculty, and there's another one. There are five ways in which they're equivalent. But what he said, which is very good, is when main mind is focusing at the object, on the general object, the sem, the main mind, is of its own accord. And the semchung, the mental function, like feeling, is being dragged along.
The act of just fixing focus.
Yeah, the act of just being aware of something, who's in charge is main mind. Who's being dragged along?
This is in essence the primary.
Like a kid after its mother.
It's like the primary perception of the object.
Yeah, the just the basic awareness of an object. Without thinking this is good, this is bad, this is red, this is high. So who's in charge right then is main mind. And feeling is getting dragged along. So main mind is acting of its own accord. He's in charge. And then feeling is acting in independence on main mind. Feeling was dragged along not independently, not of his own accord. He's dependent on mind. So when the object is being perceived by main mind, then all those little mental functions who we say are linked with main mind are dragged along without any choice of their own. Now imagine the opposite case. You go for refuge to an object. You're concentrating on the benefits of the Buddha, the good qualities of the Buddha. This is a mental function. You're not just aware of Buddha. You're concentrating on different ways in which he can help you. And you're hoping. Then the mental function is in charge, and the main mind is, it's there. You're focusing on Buddha in general, but not mainly. The main thing in your mind, the main guy who has the power at that time is not main mind. It's the hope. The hope is in charge. The hope is, we call manifest in your consciousness at that moment. The hope is standing out in front, and main mind is just getting dragged along by the hope. So in that case, hope is acting of its own accord. In that case, the little mental function is in charge and he's pulling mommy.
But refuge is the only situation to work.
No, many other. Yeah. Many other mental functions are described as acting of their own accord. It must mean something like the emotion is so strong and it's focused so much on a particular characteristic of the object that the little mental function is in charge and main mind is being led by the... Mommy is being led by the child in this case. The hope is strong and the hope is focused on a particular features of the object, and the awareness of the object is not in the front. He's there because he has to come. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to focus on anything. But he's not the main player. The main player is the mental function in that case. So that's what of its own accord means, and I like that explanation. I've never heard that clearly before. And that clears up, I think, the last part of the definition of bodhicitta that we have. Yeah.
Sometimes they say when you meditate, like you do shamatha, you concentrate on the image, the image of the Buddha, mm-hmm. because they talk about these two, like the consciousness rests on...
That's called thin, yeah.
Something, yeah. You know, so like, yeah. Once, if your eyes are looking at it, then your consciousness will be directed yeah. towards... Is yeah. that the same thing, or
no.
is that something different?
Mind and mental function, in this case maybe belief in that object, faith in that object, and awareness of that object, are both resting on your eye consciousness, on your eye power, on the physical thing inside your eye, the nerve, the optic nerve. And that's what that means. That's what that refers to. Yeah.
So are you saying...
Oh, by the way, and ting and zin, which means samadhi, the ability to concentrate, is one of the mental functions that accompanies all states of mind. It's not the big ting and zin that we're talking about. It's not the samadhi about concentrating on a Buddha. Not the samadhi that it means meditation, but the samadhi which is a mental function. Every being has that. Every being has the ability... and is concentrating on an object, even if it's only for a fleeting moment of time. Every state of mind has some ability to concentrate. So every state of mind has samadhi, but it's not the samadhi that we talk about. It's a mental function called samadhi. Yeah.
So are you saying then that whichever the feelings or the main mind, whichever has the most strength or intensity
right.
is the one that's acting of its own
accord? Right. And I like that. That makes sense to me now. So it can kind of switch back and forth, you know. If you're having a strong emotion, like hope, that this object influence can save you from hell, then your main awareness of the object is taking the back seat, and your hope is taking the front seat.
So even if the main mind has to conceive the object before you can hope in it, right. the main mind would not...
Maybe at the moment of conceiving it, the main mind is in charge.
Yeah, I see.
And then at the moment of taking refuge... You know, at the next moment when you're taking refuge in that object, first you're focusing on the object, and then you start to feel this hope. It shifts from main mind being in charge to hope being in charge. I like that explanation. That was a nice explanation. Okay.
The hope probably precedes the object anyway. I mean, most people probably have hope in refuge.
It's like the chicken and the egg. Okay. All right. We're going to talk about nirvana today. All right. We finished refuge, going for refuge, and we finished bodhicitta. Again, we're still in the chapter, the first chapter of eight chapters. We will take us about 2 years to get out of the first chapter. And it's the main thing we study in the monastery. Yeah.
Can I ask one question about last week, you know,
okay.
the four divisions of the spiritual level
right.
of bodhicitta? Right. I'm having a hard time sort of conceiving of how each one is considered bodhicitta. We're really talking about enlightenment here, I guess, aren't we? We're not really talking about bodhicitta. We're talking about
no, we
four
are.
Divisions of emptiness in a way.
It's really
divisions of
just
enlightenment,
love. Love with four different levels of understanding of who it's loving. And that the love that we have now for anybody is a very, very ignorant about its object.
We're talking about four levels of understanding of the same concept. We're not
right.
dividing the concept,
right.
we're dividing the levels
right.
of understanding.
It's still those two wishes. It still wants Buddhahood, and it still wants to help everybody. But it's understanding everybody in different ways now.
Not just everybody, everything.
Yeah. Starting with its emphasis is on the object of sentient beings. It's called Mingmei Nyingje. Mingmei Tsewei Techen Chemisi. What's that?
Something something about the
Avalokiteshvara. Yeah, it's that very important prayer to Tsongkhapa that we pray every time we do that. Sechu. Mikmetsewa, love that doesn't see anything. And that means he's developed that love that perceives.
Picturing no self.
It sees that those beings are empty at the same time that it has a true love for those beings that a mother has for her only child.
But the time you get to level 5, though, you have more obstructions.
Path 5, please. This is what gave you guys a headache last time. By the way, I learned, and then the second time I taught it, it was much better.
Keep the cake for them.
You also have.
When you get to path 5?
The emptiness of inherent existence of all phenomena,
right.
And not just.
Right, that's true. That's true.
Or is that just.
No, that's absolutely true. Okay. Yeah, in all schools, even.
So last week you said these were the levels of understanding emptiness. Now you said it's understanding bodhicitta.
Sure, they're all. We call it shishak. When you have a debate, you say, send me a shishak, okay? Do you debate? I'm talking tonight about bodhicitta. Now, everything I say about emptiness refers to bodhicitta. When you have a debate, you say, okay, look, I don't have to keep repeating Techa Sengye, okay? You understand? You understand? The guy says, yeah, I understand. Because everybody understand? I'm talking about Techa Sengye. Yeah, okay. Then you start debating emptiness. But it's all from the point of view of bodhicitta.
Yeah, it's a good idea to do that on your homework or on your test. First,
teacher.
And say, overall, by the way, everything on here is obviously about enlightenment for the sake of all beings.
Very good,
da.
Of course, because you're a tsenyiba now. You're not just a regular thinker. You're an analytical thinker. Okay. Say,
Nyunduk.
Malupa.
Malupa.
Pangbe.
Pangbe.
Sosor.
Sosor.
Tango.
Tango.
Nyangdeki.
Nyangdeki.
Tsenyi.
Tsenyi.
Nyangdeki.
Nyangdeki.
Tsenyi.
Chenyi.
We'll break down Nyange, okay? This is the definition of nirvana. Okay? This whole thing is the definition of nirvana. I mean, it's really nice to know this. I felt so good when I studied this. I said, you know, everybody's got their own idea of what nirvana is. It's a restaurant up on
it's a new perfume, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a perfume. It's a van, right?
The van.
The perfume
is some sort of. Yeah.
When
you get
to Nirvana, when you're sick of that perfume, then it's only one other one left.
So you tell them to come out with Nirvana.
Nyang is short for Nyangin Le. This whole thing is short for
Like, what's the first letter on that last line of Tibetan? Is it a
Mayatanya?
Mayatat?
Yeah, it's Mayatanya. You don't see it very often.
No, you don't. It's
a little funny.
A little funny. Okay.
The Sanskrit word is Nirvana. Nir comes from a Sanskrit root nih, which means out. And van came into English in the word vent, ventilation, wind, okay, to blow. Van means to blow. So nirvan means to blow out, like a candle, to blow out a candle. Not like to blow out on an exam or a quiz.
Yeah, we're tired.
Nir means out, and van means to blow. And it came into Greek and Latin and English as
vent.
As wind. And vent, ventilation. Okay. I think even fan comes from van. So nirvana. The Tibetans didn't translate it. By the way, that gives you a better idea when you're debating the definition of nirvana than the Tibetan translation, or maybe not. Anyways, in the early years of Tibetan Buddhism, they were into translating things by some beautiful word that described all its qualities, rather than calling it blow out, they would call it nyangin le depa. They did the same with a number of other things, like the word for jewel in Tibetan. In Sanskrit it's ratna, which means jewel, the three jewels of refuge. But in Tibetan they put koin chol, which means rare and supreme. You see, they didn't translate it, the words for jewel. This is called the early period of translation in Tibet, and some of those translations were kept in later years because they were so, maybe they were so prevalent by that time they couldn't change them, and also they're very beautiful. So, Nyangen means grief. It's a very specific word, grief. It's what you do, even in nowadays in Tibetan, we say Nyangen Chigdo. His mother died and he's grieving. Ama Tongne Nyangen Chigdo. He's grieving his mother who died. So that's the only meaning it has in Tibetan. Le means from or beyond. In this case, it means beyond. And De means gone beyond. Past, gone beyond stuff. Gone beyond grief.
Day itself means
yeah,
gone beyond?
Yeah, Deva means gone beyond.
So what does Le mean then?
Beyond. Day means
Le.
Transcended, and Le means beyond.
Oh.
Gone up above, gone out from. It's just part of a verb like to go. The to and to go. To go beyond. To go, fast, to go beyond grief. And that's the Tibetan word for nirvana. Yeah, it's a nice word. Tingyi means definition. You know that now, I think. Okay. And ki means of. Definition of nirvana. I was so confused, you know, about what nirvana was, you know, for many years, and I was very happy to see this. It means this. Nyun dri. Okay. Nyun stands for nyomong. What's that, Tom?
Klesha.
Yeah, klesha meaning?
Mental defilement.
I like mental affliction, and I'll tell you why. The Sanskrit word is klesha. It comes from a root klish. And klish means to bug somebody, to bother somebody, to pick at somebody. Okay? The nyomongs have that function. In fact, their definition is mashiwachikasamcha. They ruin your peace of mind. Okay. Any thought that ruins your peace of mind is a nyomong. I sometimes, to make it easy, I call it a bad thought. I think mental affliction is a good word too, because afflict means, you know, bothers them. Okay. Hurts you, picks on you, picks at you. As you know, if you get angry at work or if you have desire for some person or, you know, you can't rest. It's always some kind of bother. Okay. Jit means an obstacle. It comes from the word that means shadow because it blocks the way, it blocks you from seeing something or achieving something. So nyun jit is one word. It's a technical word. Nyun jit means a mental affliction obstacle. Okay? A bad thought obstacle. An obstacle which is a bad thought obstacle. Now, then you get into this debate in the monastery, you know. Are all nyundrips nyomongs? Okay? I'll ask Kylie, you know. To be a bad thought obstacle, do you have to be a bad thought? Are all bad thought obstacles bad thoughts, or is there something else in the obstacles that's not the bad thought itself? Are those two sets equivalent? Can you think of anything that would block you? By the way, the main function of a nyundrip, what does it keep you from? What does it block you from?
Good thoughts.
No, mainly nirvana. It's defined as an obstacle that blocks you mainly from nirvana.
Is ignorance the question?
There's a bitter debates about it. Okay, very difficult debates. Even if it's
the root affliction.
Oh, it's a root of all evil. But there are big debates about, for example, is it a non-virtue? And it's pretty much not. It's neutral. Very weird. It takes a lot of thinking about that. But most it is listed among the mental food, but you'll get into that. It's one of the big differences between the different schools.
Because I was thinking that could be an obstacle. It's not a
question. Oh, say again?
Ignorance? That could be an obstacle.
Oh, yeah, that could be, yeah. Could be. It is in one way. Yeah. But
so what is Gyancha?
What we call Bakchak. Bakchak is a very important idea. Okay. The word is kind of cute, Bakchak. like bok choy. You know? What's bok choy? You know.
Seeds.
Yeah, mental seeds. It literally means a mental stain, a stain on your consciousness. Okay? And those are, when you talk about nyun jibs, which are the obstacles of mental afflictions, the mental affliction obstacles, it can be a mental affliction, or it can be the bok choy for a mental affliction. For a mental affliction. Meaning...
Wait a minute, isn't there a difference between seeds and a mental stain?
Yeah, there
karmic
is.
Karmic seeds are... Yeah. So what's the better word to use?
Well, I'll describe it to you and you tell me, okay? It's the potential for it in your mind. In your mind stream.
What is it?
And it, bok choy, right? The
okay.
seed, what I'm calling seed or stain, is the potential for you to get angry. It's something
stain.
Within you, within your mind, which is not even mental, as a matter of fact. It stays in your mind, and it's for so long as you possess it, you can still get angry. It's what triggers anger in your mind.
Are you saying that...
What you carry around in your mental stream, that when someone yells at you, it produces the nyama.
What's the word for karmic? What's the word they use when I'm talking about karmic?
Similar. Similar.
So
different depends on what school you're in. That's one of the main questions of the mind on the school.
Are you distinguishing between the karmic propensity to experience something that's already there, a seed, versus the propensity to cause more seeds? Is that the difference?
What I'm talking about now is the seed for anger, which is within you. And whether or not you get angry normally depends on the situation, the environment that you're in. They make a distinction, for example, monks. They stay in the middle of the monastery. They never see a lady. Okay? Did they get rid of the bok choy of desire? No. Do they have desire in their minds presently, manifestly? No. But if they go outside, if they go outside the monastery and they go to the town and they see some nice lady, then they can get desire because they have the bok choy. They still have this seed in their minds. They don't have desire in their minds while they're in the monastery because there's nothing to cause it. But as long as they still have this seed, then when
contributing factors
are around. When they're in a different environment where there is an object
secondary cause.
Cause which could trigger that seed and make it become desire, that then they still are not arhats, for example. That's one example. Okay, so the mental affliction, desire or anger, what's the stuff it's made of? We talk about stuff in Buddhism. Mental stuff, physical stuff, or stuff which is neither. Okay, what is it?
Mental.
It's mental stuff. Okay, it's made of mind. Okay, what's the bok choy made of? It's not mind. It's some kind of potential. It's some kind of energy. It's some kind of force that stays in your heart. And when all the conditions is what I was looking for. When all the conditions are ready, there's a nice lady there, you had a bad night, you're tired, you know, whatever. And you see her and then you get desire.
So you're saying this is an energetic predisposition?
It's a potential.
Energetic potential.
It's a little bit of energy in your mind. It's not mental. It's some kind of seed, some kind of power for that thing to happen in your heart.
So what can we say? You know, we had this conversation about what is karma. You know, we say, you know, karma is not some energetic propensity, that, you know, or not some energetic stuff that's happening to you. And yet now you're saying, you know,
well,
this is energetic.
I never referred to karma. I'm not talking about karma.
No, the last series.
Yeah, when basically karma is simba. Karma is whenever the mind moves, that's karma.
Well,
now after you commit a karma, which
right,
karma means action,
the karmic seeds, the right.
Then the seed for that is similar
energetic.
To a bok choy.
It is an energetic
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it is the same kind of thing. Yeah, it is a kind of energy that stays in your own mind. So anyway, nyun jib refers now, you know, not only to the mental afflictions, but to their potential in your own heart. So, and those two things, the bad thoughts that you actually have, and then all those little potentials, then you know that you, from your past life, you have a stronger potential or a weaker potential for each kind of bad thought. You know, I happen to have more for desire than for anger. It's very hard for someone to get me angry. If I see a nice lady in the forest, I'm not supposed to, okay? So I have still that bhakti, okay? So that's a difference. Each person has different strengths of bhakti for different things. Nyunjib means that both those bad thoughts and the potentials for those bad thoughts block you from nirvana. They obscure it. They stop you from reaching nirvana.
How do you spell bhakti?
Yeah, how do you
spell it? I'll spell it for you. In Tibetan. And bhak sort of means a stain, and chak means a growth, something that's staying grown, a stain developed. Kind of nasty. But you have them, they stain your consciousness, your mental stream. If you're who you seem to be.
Well, you shouldn't make them sound like you're old.
Can you write it the word?
They are pretty much negative, but there are some good ones.
What the word, stain?
You can call it mental seed.
A mental seed.
Yeah, seed in your mind.
Michael, getting an initiation is not a bhakti?
I don't think they would they could refer to it as bhakti, but not normally.
Nirvana refers to it as seed of bhakti.
It's possible, but it's not normally. It's not the most frequent use of the word.
So they refer to it as a karmic potential or something?
How do you refer to it? So a good
stain
versus
a mental seed.
Huh? Well, a good thing would be, and this would be what about with the antithesis of bhakti?
Oh, bhakti can be good, but most of the time when you say bhakti, you're talking about the bhakti for a bad thing. It's quite possible to have a good bhakti too.
So you just say mental seed or something.
Yeah, it is neutral idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, but most times it refers to it's a bhangja. Most of the times it's something you want to remove from your mental state.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The seed, it happened just for in this life, or it has to be carried over?
The main cause for that seed is your habits of your past life. The reason why some people get angry easily, and some people don't get angry easily now, is the strength of the bhakti, and that depends on their past life. If they got angry a lot in their past life, they have what we call a thick bhakti for getting angry in this life. And anger will be triggered in them quickly. And then if you don't have it does refer to your habits of your past life, mainly.
Yeah, but to me I feel like it just happened when you're growing up, with what kind of family you live.
You can get some in this life too. Yeah, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing. You know, you can get good bhakti in your early days. And even the secret teachings depend on that concept in some ways. Okay. Nyunjab means a bad thought obstacle, which now you know doesn't have to be only a bad thought, it can be a seed. Malupa means in their entirety, totally, all of them. Okay, malupa. Literally, it means with nothing left over. You don't have to worry about it. Okay. Entirely. In their entirety. Okay. Bangba means eliminated. Eliminated from your mental stream. Okay. Removed from your mental stream. Bangba. Sosor tango is a nasty word. Very difficult. You know gopa already. Gop means cessation. Gop means cessation.
Cessation or sensation?
Cessation.
Cessation.
Yeah. And what does cessation mean? Who can give me a cessation?
Cessation of anger.
Well, they can be temporary.
Cessation of anger. Yeah. Cessation normally implies permanent. Yeah. I mean, in Buddhism, you're trying to get these cessations. Almost the meaning of the word cessation implies a ceasing, right? So the cessation of anger would be if you could no longer ever get angry again. I'm trying to think of an important Sotsodhammiki book that I just had.
By the way, for the purpose of clarity, in terms of the class and homework and test, is it safe to agree that cessation means permanent, or do we have to keep in mind that some cessations aren't permanent?
I can't. There are no cessations which aren't. Cessation, meaning the absence of something, is always permanent. Negative things are normally permanent, meaning unchanging. The word, I don't want to get into it, but the word permanent and impermanent in Buddhism, in English, is kind of not very clear. Maybe it should have been changing and unchanging. I don't like the use of the words permanent and impermanent, but that's another story. Okay. Basically, permanent means, if it means that you'll never revert from that state, yeah, most cessations are like that.
You've lost
the definite maybe.
For it, right?
When you debate, you have to say that. What's that?
You've lost the thing, and you've lost the seeds for it.
Right, right.
Completely.
Yeah, the cessation here refers to that. Okay, a cessation in which you have eliminated from your mind, from your mental stream, every one of the bad thoughts and their seeds. Okay. Now we got to talk about sosodak, which is a difficult idea. Okay. Yeah.
Could we have just a minute to write down what you just said?
Okay,
go ahead. A cessation in which you have eliminated?
Yeah, roughly, okay? A cessation in which you have eliminated in their entirety the mental affliction obstacles.
So we're not talking about suppressing dakcha or neutralizing dakcha, so we're talking about eliminating, right?
Sure.
Like getting rid of it.
There are two kinds of gopas, there are two kinds of cessations. You can divide cessations into two types. In the Abhidharma, it says, Duma chenam simyam ke, namkak dhani dhipo. And that's the source of this idea. There are cessations you get from seeing emptiness directly, and there are cessations you get before that.
You said with regards to the second wish of the four.
Okay.
You've said many times that having once perceived emptiness directly, that you're never the same.
Right.
And you had even at one point, I believe, said that you will never again think that things exist inherently.
Right.
But then you backed off and said, but you still could think that.
No, before Tom.
No, that was the second one you said.
No,
that.
Cannot. Can see it.
But don't can you be still forced have to see it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, you get rid of.
I mean, don't you still have the seeds to think it?
But you don't have the seeds to believe in what you see anymore. Never again.
This is that the second.
After the path of seed. Yeah.
Right. But you still have the seeds.
That's what Gomon is all about: getting rid of those seeds.
The seeds to what?
To seeing things as self.
To see.
To being forced to see things as self, even though you know you're wrong.
Not to think. Yeah. Just
yeah. Yeah.
Not just the seeds of seeing them.
Yeah.
The seeds of thinking.
Not just perceiving it that way, but thinking it.
When I say thinking, and that's why I held this paper, what I mean is believing it intellectually.
Yes.
Someone asks you, is it possible for things to exist
right.
Self-existently? You say, it's possible up to the path of seeing that your mind could be swayed by a bad teacher. Like some teacher teaches you something wrong about emptiness. It's possible up to that moment that you could be swayed by a convincing wrong argument about emptiness, that emptiness could be something other than what it really is. After that moment, it's impossible for you to ever be swayed in that way because you saw it directly. And it makes sense that you would never be swayed again. And you won't be, by the way. It's a nice feeling. You know, you can go to all these lectures and hear all this BS, and you just say, well, that's wrong. You know, that's silly. Where'd you get that? Show me the book. Obviously, you didn't see it emptiness directly. Where'd you get this idea about it? You know, show me the book. And you're like, oh, well, I figured it out. You know, just wrong, flatly wrong. And you'll know that at a certain point. You'll see it. It's like someone telling you something silly about, you know, hey, a car works because there's three horses in the trunk, you know. And, you know, if you're an Aborigine, you might believe it. But once you've seen, you say, well, that's silly, you know, that's not like that.
But once you get to the third level, for example, and you still have the seeds, you see things that
third
work.
Kind.
Third.
Or third path.
Third path.
Yeah, path of seeing.
Well,
path
no,
of seeing?
Third
kind of bodhicitta.
The third kind of bodhicitta.
Okay.
You still have to see.
Right.
To see.
To be forced to see it that way.
As though they were inherently existing.
Yeah. But it never happened manifestly in your mind.
And that corresponds. Are we talking about the same thing, one with respect to seeing, one with respect to thinking?
Yes.
At between levels?
Yeah. That's, I mean, I'm just, you guys taught me that. I'm just teaching you math. All right.
You say you have two cessations.
Yeah, that's, can I get back on the subject? There are two kinds of cessations.
So the first cessation is when you see emptiness.
I didn't start them yet, okay?
Oh.
I did start, but I didn't get very far. The first kind of cessation is a cessation you get because you've seen emptiness directly.
That's the first time.
Yeah.
And what is it exactly that cessates at that point?
Depends on what path you're on. But don't ask. Let me go my own way for a little bit. I'll get to it. But
okay.
Let me present it in the way that the book does and the way I understand it. Alright. Sosotango. When you perceive emptiness directly, what happens right after that? We've said it many times. As you're coming down from the direct perception.
You meet the Buddha who tells you that you will become a Buddha yourself within.
He doesn't say it, but you do see the Dhammakaya Buddha. You will understand that you have met the Dhammakaya Buddha. You understand that you have met Buddhas. You believe that you have seen the Buddha, and you have seen the Buddha. It's not that he tells you, but you understand that you have so many lives to go.
Last time we talked about that, you said, no, you see the Buddha face to face directly.
I didn't say that you see his form body.
Well, let's not bore the rest
okay.
of the
You do see no. the Buddha. You see his. You see one of his bodies.
He's amazing and glorious.
Directly. Okay. Those ideas that you have as you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, seeing that you did have past lives, really understanding that this life is suffering, seeing how many lives you have to go, seeing a Buddha, those perceptions are all related to the Four Noble Truths. That's why they're called the Four Noble Truths. You see the truth of the Four Noble Truths. That is the first time you see the real truth of the Four Noble Truths. During that time. You go through the Four Noble Truths one by one. And the word noble is a bad translation for Arya. Why are they called Arya truths?
Because they come from direct perception.
Yeah, because you just became an Arya. So they shouldn't never have called them noble.
Well, that's a big distinction, isn't it?
No, it's a huge distinction. Bad translation.
It certainly does.
No, it has nothing to do with being ignoble or noble. Okay, the word is Pakpa, the word is Arya. It's just
that's
a bad
incredible.
Translation. Okay. It's Arya truth because you're an Arya now and you're seeing that they're true. And you really do. You go through them one by one. Ding, 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 ding. Oh yeah, everything really is suffering. I really am doomed to die in this body, you know. I really, and it really did come from my bad thoughts and karma. And there is a way out. I see the end of my life. I see that in seven lives I'll be finished. And I see what a Buddha is. And I understand that these books are holy and precious and they are completely right. You know, every word in them is completely correct. And my God, I better be careful with them from now on. You know, this is my savior. These words are my savior. And you have all these emotions and these perceptions at that time. That's perceiving the Four Noble Truths one by one. And that's what soso means. Soso means one by one. Thought means to analyze or to see them one by one. To go through them one by one.
Is both sosor and thak, is it both referring to the Four Noble Truths?
Sosor is referring to in one. Sosor means one by one, meaning the Four Noble Truths one by one.
That's what it's referring to.
And if you want
to
get technical, it's a 16 aspect of the Four Noble Truths. But I didn't want you to get into that.
In this definition.
Yeah.
Can you tell briefly about Four Noble Truths?
Yeah, Four Noble Truths are this. I really am suffering. That's the first one. I mean, everything about me is suffering. Period. That my job is going to screw up sooner or later. Any person I love or care for is either going to die, or I'm going to die, or we'll split up. There's no other choice. Okay. My own body is doomed. You know, I'm going to get cancer, AIDS. Who cares? I mean, it's one or the other. You know, there's no future. It's suffering. I will be horizontal. I'm doomed to horizontality. You know? One day I'll be laying there lifeless. It's true, you know.
It's a truth.
Being standing up is like a temporary condition. I will go down. There'll be a day when I go down for the last time. I will.
I will go up and down.
Gravity will win. You know, it will. There's no question. It's just a matter of time and place, you know. And it's suffering. There's no future in me. And aside from that, that's just a lousy physical condition. My mind is unhappy. It's a state of unhappiness. I can't make it happy. I'm always dissatisfied. I always want more. I can't have peace. It's always bothering me. I get something, then I want more. I don't get something, I get angry. I get angry, I create more. The mind itself is messed up. Okay. I don't even see things right. You know, my perception of reality is all wrong. Where I think things are coming from is totally wrong.
But the question is, can you fool yourself long enough?
Well,
to
we're trying. No, but at the moment of, just after you come out of the direct perception of emptiness, you start to have these four thoughts. You do perceive these things directly.
You have to perceive emptiness.
Can you
first
see them while you're perceiving emptiness?
No.
And you cannot frame a thought while you're perceiving emptiness directly. You can't think, oh, life sucks. You know, you can't. You know, you can't. You can't do that. It's only as you come down out of that perception. You're still in the path of seeing, by the way. Okay, it's the second half of it, the path of seeing. The path of seeing is not all meditational, direct, deep meditation. It's also the period after that. It's the afterglow. And you are starting to go through the Four Noble Truths. So you go through this, I am suffering. You believe it. And then you see where it came from. You truly understand that it comes from your own misperception of seeing. Okay, that's number two, the source. So number the Four Noble Truths is, number one is that everything really is suffering. The second one is that everything, that suffering has come from my own bad thoughts. We call origin or source, the source of the suffering. Coming from my own bad thoughts and my own bad deeds. Okay. The third one is cessation, meaning it will stop in the future. You see it's going to stop. You know it's going to stop, and you know how long it will take. For example, you can really truly see that in seven lives, which will be very pleasant lives, I'll be comfortable physically, as comfortable as a person can be in this life, and I'll have good teachers, and I'll be studying these books, and I'll be a monk, and blah blah blah. Seven more lives.
You're always going to be a monk? Can't you be married?
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then the last one.
Michael believes it can be marriage without suffering. So.
And then the last one is the way to do it. The path.
What's the third one?
Number three is cessation. The end. And number four is the path. These are the Four Noble Truths.
What is the path?
Two results and two causes. They go result, cause, result, cause. Suffering and its cause. The end and its cause. You're going to study that in the Perfection of Wisdom. That's a big subject, and it comes later. It's called Denshi. We're not going to do that tonight. Okay, so sosor thak is a kind of cessation that comes from seeing the Four Noble Truths, the Four Arya Truths. Okay, when does that have to happen?
right after the first time one perceives emptiness, on correct. The way back down out of that experience of experiencing
yeah.
emptiness.
Yeah, so it has to happen on which path at the time?
I'm
seeing, which is what number?
Three.
Number three. Okay. First we had collection or accumulation.
Preparation.
And then third we had pain. So are there any cessations that happen on the first two paths? Right, and I want to give you one. They have one here in the text which I like, which I think is a good one to bring up. There's an idea called getache. Getache. Getache means to cut your virtue roots. To cut the roots of your virtue.
You don't do it? It's a bad thing to do.
No, it's a very evil thing. There's a big subject. It's a long subject. It's like, how can you screw up to the ultimate? You know, how is it that you can actually, you know, how is it that you can burn every little bit of goodness you have inside you? Okay, and that's a whole subject. It's called getache. It's called cutting the root of virtue. The main cause is lokta. The main cause is really believing in wrong views. And one of the worst wrong views is, oh, there's no such thing as karma. There's no such thing as morality. I can do what I want. As long as no one catches me, as long as no one ever finds out, I can do what I want. You know, that's okay.
There is no sin.
That's a wrong view. That is a very horrible wrong view. Or to say there's no enlightenment. There's no way out of this suffering. I might as well shoot myself. That's a very bad wrong view. Those wrong views have the ability to cut your virtue roots. They have the ability to burn and to waste whatever goodness you have inside of you.
So most people think those things can be fun.
Yeah, to hold them strongly, and here he says with anger also. I mean, some kind of violent belief that these things are. You know, Mao Zedong said religion is. He said some bad things. But, you know, that's probably a getache. That probably qualifies. Out of anger and out of those wrong views, to burn those roots of virtue inside you, it cannot happen after a certain step of the second path. Okay. By having renunciation, by understanding emptiness intellectually, there comes a time in the second path when you will never again think those things and burn that virtue. It's impossible. So you achieve
a
cessation for that. That's a cessation which does not depend on. No, so sort. Seeing those four noble truths one by one, because you just saw emptiness directly.
So the second path is the preparation.
Yeah. So there's a point on the path of preparation where it's impossible for you ever again to burn that virtue inside you. And by the way, there's a point on the path of preparation where you can no longer take a lower birth.
We can no longer.
You achieve a cessation for a lower birth. You can never again go to a lower birth. After you've reached that point, you will never again go to a lower birth.
So you'll get a cessation about destroying great, vast amounts of virtue?
We call it
destroy getta. Some, but not like a big forest
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, you can't destroy your root. Fundamental goodness within you,
like the root.
Except for those two. Yeah.
But this sounds like something, cutting the roots of your virtue in this way. This getache sounds so sort of violent and all-encompassing.
Yeah, it is.
But then...
Yeah. It's very, very
presumably
evil
presumably we all sniff away here.
No, no, that's not it. I mean, getache means to totally reject goodness. You know, it's like a Hitler type of thought, you know. There's no reason to be moral. If you, they may do it in their own little way, you know. But almost every human being alive understands that it's wrong to hurt people. We're talking about people who don't have that. We're talking about people who say, you know, you can do whatever you want. It's one life to live. There's no such thing as God's retribution or karma or whatever you want to call it. And I can do what I want. And you see these extreme cases like that. That's getache.
What is the definition of psychopath?
Someone
like that who has absolutely no reference as far as their ethics.
So when you reach that point where you can no longer ever have that, that's a cessation, but it's not a sosor tak. We call it sosor tak min. What does min mean? Mayin. A non individual analysis cessation. Okay. So there are two kinds of cessations you can have. One is a result, basically, of seeing emptiness directly, and they happen on the third, fourth, and fifth path. And then the other kinds of cessations are cessations you get from some kind of Dharma understandings and things, and you can have those before you reach the perception of emptiness. We're talking heavy duty. Now we get back to the point. Nirvana has to come from the first kind of cessation. Nirvana is the first kind of cessation. Nirvana can only happen if you see what?
Emptiness
directly, and then you see the Four Noble Truths. The Four Arya Truths, please. Okay. Alright, so that's the final part of the definition. Now you have the whole definition of Nirvana.
This saying that emptiness is, once you perceive emptiness directly, you've reached Nirvana, or you have one of the requirements for Nirvana?
Yeah, Nirvana is a cessation which must occur, which must be brought on by a perception of emptiness directly. It's an ending of something nasty in your mental stream, but that ending has to be through this incredible power of seeing emptiness directly.
But only emptiness directly and something else.
Right, practicing a lot. That's what the fourth path is all about. That's why they call it what?
Habituation.
You're getting used to what you thought. And you keep thinking, and the whole path of habituation has like these 12, 18, 20 levels of, you know, first you get rid of your gross anger, then you get rid of your more subtle anger, and then you get rid of the, they have 9 divisions. There's the subtle, there's the gross anger, the middle gross anger, and the subtle gross anger. Then you get to the little anger, the middle anger, and the, I'm sorry, gross middle anger, middle anger, subtle middle anger. And then you go through all these, you're basically chipping away at anger with this incredible thing that you see. Until finally at the end, you reach this gopa. You can't have that anger anymore.
Can you give us the whole thing now?
Yeah. It's in the text actually, but it's a cessation which comes from I called it in the translation the individual analysis, and now you know what I'm talking about. The individual analysis means seeing the Four Noble Truths one by one as a result of seeing emptiness directly. So it's a cessation which comes from that individual analysis. You could think of it as seeing emptiness directly and the Four Arya Truths. Okay? And which consists of eliminating entirely the mental affliction obstacle from your mental stream. So basically, Nirvana means the day when you don't have any more bad thoughts, and you don't even have any more seeds for any more bad thoughts, because you've seen emptiness directly.
But I thought you only get to the point where you don't have any more seeds for being a Buddha.
Right.
And you could attain Nirvana without being a Buddha.
Yeah. You can attain Nirvana without being a Buddha. Just you can reach without being a Buddha. You can destroy all the bad thoughts and all the seeds for the bad thoughts without being a Buddha.
But that is question.
Right.
Oh.
Oh. The same Nirvana. The exact same Nirvana that a Mahayana person.
No. But from the point of view of removing those bad thoughts, yes.
So if you remove all the bad thoughts and their seeds and you had bodhicitta.
If you had love soaking your mind, those two desires. For Buddhahood to help people, Yeah, you'd be a Buddha. Boom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mahayana Nirvana and Buddhahood are the same thing.
Oh, okay.
They don't call it Nirvana, but they might as well. Okay. Yeah. By the way, tarpa, freedom, is a synonym for nyanga. Okay. Moksha, freedom, liberation, and nirvana are all the same thing. The word is the same. The meaning is the same.
And also liberation.
Yeah, you see tarpa publications from. I mean, that was tarpa, and it means freedom, and it's a synonym for nirvana. Yeah.
Going back to Bhaktas, let me make sure I understand that for a minute.
It's a difficult subject, and we will study it.
Just to forget the idea of nyunga. So you have a mental affliction, you know, the obstacle of a mental affliction,
right.
And responding to that mental affliction, getting pissed off or whatever,
yeah.
Creates predisposition to behave that way again in Bhaktas.
Right.
If you have this mental affliction, and you don't respond by getting angry, then you don't generate the Bhaktas.
Beautiful. Now let me take you one more step. And what is it that makes you not respond?
Was that understanding of emptiness and karma?
Just plain knowledge.
Hmm.
Just plain understanding. Your understanding of the process has to overcome your natural instinct. It's very difficult.
And so mental affliction doesn't automatically generate bhaksha?
No. Yeah. If you let it go.
Yeah, I mean, if you let it. It's
yeah,
not,
yeah.
It
if you can stop it,
yeah.
it won't plant a very good bhakcha. It'll plant a very wimpy bhakcha.
What do you call what's there?
Excuse me?
Would you call bhakcha what's there as potential, even if it's not actualized?
Right.
Long
and a lot of.
Perceive empty as reckless?
Yeah, a lot of the practice of doing death, of going through death the right way. A lot of that involves not activating bhakti. Yeah. They're there, but not giving them, it's called not pouring the water of bad emotions on top of that bhakti. The bhaktis are there as you die, but if you're able to control your mind as you die, they don't get watered. And then they die in their state as a seed. They don't have anything to trigger them. The tenth link of dependent origination, which we call chupasipa, which is badly mangled in translation, it's the process of activating the seeds. It's a kind of karma. And we'll study that. We'll study the 12 links.
Now, these bhaktas don't die. They go to your next rebirth, right?
They never get triggered.
But they're still there.
You don't take a rebirth.
Oh, you're still at that point. That's
yeah, yeah,
us.
Yeah. I mean, you don't take a normal rebirth. Yeah. Yeah. Those bhaktas aren't able to produce a body and mind like
right,
that.
Right, right, right. They're still floating around so they get destroyed.
I don't know if there's a mental stream for them to be in.
You're talking about this high level, but I mean, for us, we take a rebirth as
yeah.
So we've
yeah.
carried them with us time and again, and yeah. so we get to the time when we can die without watering them. You make it sound like when you can die without anger, without fear, without the.
Partly that, yeah. Mainly those two, wanting something or hating something. But I'm not going to get into that. That's not a method. We'd rather do it before that. Okay. You can achieve nirvana tonight. And you will look the same to everyone tomorrow. I mean, nirvana does not require death.
So how does it change?
Nothing to do, right? Nothing in the definition that would suggest that you have to die.
So
it's just when you eliminate through knowledge, when you eliminate that habit and the seeds for it, then you can achieve nirvana and you walk around like John Stillwell thing.
So if you experience nirvana and you're not. Appear the same. How are you substantially changed? You have, you know, all this bliss. I would assume you're
we're
gonna
all this bliss. We're gonna discuss it after the break. Seriously, we're gonna discuss it.
The first blissful cookie.
You say cessation. You don't say all cessation in the definition. So couldn't that mean that you stop the anger but you still have fire?
No, we did say entirely. In their entirety.
Oh, so it's what is it? All cessation in their entirety.
No, it's a cessation. Of all your bad thoughts.
Oh,
yeah,
wait.
Don't forget cessation means just an ending.
A cessation of?
Of all your bad thoughts.
But,
and
but
all
what's the, I want to write down the right thing.
Okay.
A cessation of?
You can say a cessation in which all your bad thoughts and all of their seeds have been eliminated from your, from the stream of your mind. And then there's one more element there. What are we missing when I say it that way? A cessation where all the bad thoughts and all their seeds have been eliminated from your mind. Because you perceived emptiness in the form. You got to talk about what was the gun that shot them. All right. It's called Nyembo Topden. What is the atom bomb that has the power to stop them permanently? Is there's only one, and it's the perception of emptiness directly. And in fact, the proof that samsara has an end. Does it have a beginning?
No.
It has no beginning. The proof that it has an end is that perceiving emptiness is such a powerful gun. That's the proof for the end of samsara.
You mean like a debating proof?
Yeah, when you debate the end of samsara. Does it have a beginning? No. Does it have an end? Yeah. Karin. Go for the
top thing in your mind. It has no beginning, but it has an end?
Absolutely.
Just because something has the potential to look like it doesn't mean that it does.
Yeah, it didn't, you shouldn't come to this class. Okay, yeah. Have a break. Go.
Actually, they do a definition.
Analyze it.
No.
After you define it, what do you do next?
You prove it.
You did that already, right? You did each part of the definition. So what, then you go on to the division. And that's normal, pretty normal. The types. How many types in the world are there?
Two.
Five.
What's the ending?
One that happens at five different times.
I'm sorry, four.
Nirvana.
There's actually
more. There's like
6 or 7. We're going to stick
to four. Nanshin is natural.
So this is natural nirvana.
This is nirvana number one of four?
Yes.
Basic. Five. Wasn't it five?
Four. It's four. I'm sorry. I should not have to find it. It's four. There are more, but we're going to stick to four right now.
Jeez.
Again.
All of those first course students know what this is. Say Dindam.
Dindam.
Dimba.
Dindam. Dindam.
Dindam is ultimate. Dindam means true.
You pronounce the P like a B.
It's not a P or a B.
Neither.
No, you don't have it in English. You don't have it in English. And scholars who don't know Tibetan very well fight over whether it's a P or a B. Neither one. That's why they fight. Dindam, ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is half of existence. What's the other half?
Relative truth.
Yeah. We call it what?
Deceptive truth.
We call it deceptive truth, or apparent truth, maybe. We call it deceptive truth.
Which one do you call it?
Everything is either ultimate truth or deceptive truth. What's this pen?
I don't want to.
It's ultimate deceptive truth being perceived right now by us as deceptive truth.
Deceptive truth.
There is no ultimate
because it has
truth.
No, it's not self-existent.
There is no ultimate truth.
It is not ultimate truth.
Because
it is not ultimate truth on any level to anyone.
But and there's no ultimate truth to it.
But it has had
it has ultimate truth.
It
is not
ultimate truth.
Do you kindly have a code?
Yes, absolutely.
Are you a code?
Am I a coach?
Same thing. No, I mean, this is silly. It has ultimate reality. Not reality. You're not a coach. You have a coach. It's different. This is December. Why?
Good compositor.
Touching.
One reason.
Is that what karma that makes us see it?
I don't know.
Emptiness is not compositor.
No.
Of course it is, because you have to do something to do something. Anyway, that's a moment of pain. It's deceptive reality. Why? Come on.
Because it's being perceived by...
Because to a normal mind, okay, meaning a messed up mind, it looks as though it's self-existent, and it's not. Your mind, there's a part of your mind that if I ask you where did this pen come from or how did this pen come to be, you always have the wrong answer. Okay. To a normal mind. That's why this is deceptive reality. Its nature is to fool you. It's actually not its nature. The nature of a normal mind is to be fooled by this pen. Okay. What's the other kind of reality? Ultimately, the word truth in this case, you have to realize, and you should always remember, doesn't mean truth. It doesn't mean a true fact. In this case, the word truth is a word for reality. It doesn't mean truth. It doesn't mean the fact that this is not a lie, this is the truth. It doesn't mean that at all. Why? Can you divide truth into deceptive truth and real truth, ultimate truth? Not at all. Deceptive truth is a lie by nature. You don't divide truth into lies and real truth. Okay? It's not truth. What they call ultimate truth and what they call it, relative truth, which I don't like that term. I don't even know where they got it from.
I think conventional.
You can call it conventional, but the word in Tibetan and in Sanskrit is deceptive. You know? And that's the point. It's not that it's conventional. Well, it is. It happens to be conventional, but that's not the point. The point is that it fools you. It's bogus. Yeah.
And there's nothing that gets across the idea that it has to be in the world, certain conditions, and
nothing to do with relativity in the word itself. No, nothing. There is no even flavor of that in the world. You know, it's explained all over scriptures as this is why it fools you, this is why it affects you, this is why it seems to be one thing, this is why it's deceptive, this is why it's bogus. There's nothing about, you know, it happens to be true that all bogus reality is relative, and all bogus reality is, what was the other word?
Conventional.
Conventional, but that's not what the word is.
Then what do you say when you're talking about the appearance of,
what appears to us?
Piece of rope that appears to be a thing.
Sometimes they call it nominal reality, or conceptual reality, or something else. But anyway, understand that natural nirvana means ultimate reality. That's natural nirvana.
Natural nirvana.
Yeah. Why do you think it's natural? Why do you think ultimate truth should be natural? What does natural mean to you? What's the opposite of natural? Artificial.
Fake.
Artificial. Natural means that something has had this quality forever and ever. In Tibetan you say dumene. It means from the beginning of time it had this quality. That's what natural means. Nobody made it, nobody put it there, nobody fixed it later. For time without beginning it has had this nature. That's what natural means.
So it seems that there's only we have broken it down to two, but now it seems to be just one.
No, by the way, we're only on number one. What I'm saying is that this equals this. This equals this. Huh? And we're on nirvana number one. Okay. We haven't reached any other kind of nirvana yet. What I'm saying is that natural nirvana is defined as ultimate reality. What is natural nirvana? Ultimate reality. What is natural nirvana?
Ultimate reality.
Homony. That's the one.
Can you do it?
Yeah, do it. So does every object have natural nirvana? Yeah. Okay, that's why they call it
including
natural.
The pen you were just holding up?
Yep.
Ah!
Gotcha.
Yeah, good. Good question. I like it. See, you're starting to break down the thing. Yeah. We all understand the natural. I mean, every object in the universe has been for as long as it exists and for as long as it shall exist. It does not have any self-nature, and that's its emptiness. But how is this, how is the emptiness of this pen, how is the true nature of this pen, nirvana? What's the definition of nirvana? Stopping bad thoughts and their seeds in your mind state. Did the pen do that?
Did that mind state?
No. Okay, good. Good answer. Okay. So, Rangshin Yangde is not...
Mental.
Natural nirvana is not...
Oh,
nirvana. Alright. We had this before. We divided things in name only. Okay. This thing got the name natural nirvana, but it ain't a nirvana. Okay. Sugarcane bodhicitta is
not
bodhicitta. Okay. We had some other divisions like that. What were those? Oh, five monks is not the Sangha jewel. These books are not the Dharma, but you can and these books are not Prajnaparamita, but they can be called the perfection. Right? We say Vajradhikibhane. It's about in name only. Okay. Just nominally, you can call this Nirvana, but it's not Nirvana. Now I'll give you an interesting question. This is not on your homework. This is just something to think about. Could anything be this kind of nirvana and also be the other kind of nirvana?
What's the other
kind?
Yeah, what is
the one that we defined before. Cessation. That ending of bad thoughts in somebody's mind state. Is there anything which is natural nirvana and also the ending of bad thoughts in someone's mind state permanently?
Your Buddha nature?
Cool, yeah, very, very close. Yeah. The Dharma body of Buddha. It is a cessation. One of the parts of his body is a cessation, and it is emptiness also.
It's the emptiness of the mind of
the
or the emptiness of the mind of somebody who has seen
and
emptiness.
And there's a bitter debate about it. I mean, but anyway, basically, this is not such a good case.
This emptiness, natural nirvana, is a component or a subset of the full nirvana definition.
No, it's not.
It's
emptiness.
Like every other object, nirvana has its emptiness. And so in that sense, nirvana has its natural nirvana.
Right.
But it's not... But it's not in the definition anywhere.
Well, it is to perceive emptiness.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's implied. Yeah. It's not stated yet. Yeah.
So why are you saying this is one of the four types of nirvana if it's not nirvana?
Deja Rikigone, in name only.
In name.
We just want you to hear all the things that are called nirvana.
So maybe we should like have different names instead of saying four types of nirvana.
this isn't really a
you
type
can
of
say...
Nirvana.
Nominally, four types of nirvana. And that's exactly what the text says. When you read it at home, you'll see that.
Are the words different in Tibetan?
Yeah, they say, before they say there are four types of nirvana, they say, in name only, there are four types of nirvana.
It's getting far afield. Like, we're doing four types of nirvana, but it's not really nirvana. So
right.
It's like four oranges, but they're not really oranges. Let's have apples for lunch.
Well, what if I say it this way? Here are four things that all throughout the scriptures are called nirvana. So you better know them. Because when you bump into natural nirvana, your student is going to say, hey, John, what's natural nirvana? You'll say, well, let's see, not mental. I don't know if it's nirvana.
That's my
mom. Yeah. Okay, so you got to, it's just learning the four things that are called nirvana. And this one is not nirvana.
You'll never be able to use the word nirvana again on your homework or your test. I'm qualifying it.
And this isn't even sugarcane.
How do I know you mean nirvana? It was a natural nirvana.
It's not a cessation.
You didn't say.
It's like the Svatantrika is really messed up or something, right? Is that
don't think that. Don't ever say that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
If we could really be a Svatantrika, we probably wouldn't be here. So that's what I was thinking. What time is it?
Well, it's not really time at all. It's only nominally 10 o'clock.
We have a problem making it in the room.
That's it.
I'm saving the other three for next week because I'll tell you what they are. Okay, there's. You don't write it down. Don't write it down. This is a pre. What do you call it?
Sneak preview.
Sneak preview.
This has been approved by for all of us. One is nirvana with nothing. Nirvana with something left. Don't write.
Remainder.
Nirvana with something left over. What do you think it is?
The nirvana
of
nirvana.
No, somebody. No, you still have some. You have some suffering. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you're still left with it. You know, if you achieve nirvana tonight, as we described it, are you free of all suffering? No, you still got a body that's going to get sick and die and all that. That's with something left over. And then when you give up this body, you've got nirvana with nothing left over. And then there's nirvana with nirvana, which is even psycho different.
And
those are going to be the other three types. Yes.
Sati Bhuti Dukhi Medhata Virale Jini Dekyam Padhi Sange Shingam Mikte Uvahi Trokunam Dakshin Vacha Parasho Idam Guranam Adatam Yajatayami Kevati Kevokru
Okay. Here's your homework.
Thank you.
Yeah, anyway, thank you. By the way, you guys are doing really good. The last homework was really good. It was a difficult thing, and I didn't explain it. I don't think anybody knows anything up there except for I'm not sure. But you're studying hard, and I can tell. Look, it's technical.
Sasi Bhruhi Jushin Netosham Viravin Shinyande Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shimla
This is the end of Class 5.